following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, it is that time of the week. It's the greatest Tuesday of Halloween. It's time for the True Wealth Radio Show. I'm your host, David Little John. The show with you is
Matt Dixon.
If you say it fast, it's better.
Yes.
By the way, this is tax day. Wah, wah.
Have you filed your taxes yet?
No. I have filed an extension. Yeah, I'm not a good example anymore, right? I'm the wrong guy to have. Have you filed your taxes?
Well, it was mainly a question for the people driving in their car because I just want someone
totally
to be like, oh gosh, you know,
holy,
like swerve the.
Yeah,
like, I forgot.
Oh no, it's that day.
This is your friendly reminder.
Yeah, by the way, if you have not gotten in retirement plan contributions, it's too late.
It's gone.
Yeah. You, in theory, could, if you could still get it postmarked today, and about the only way you could pull that off is to drop it before the deadline at the post office, and then they'll
certified
still postmark
mail or something.
The day of. Doesn't have to be certified, but you need to have a postmark, and they will oftentimes honor the date because the postmark is an independent third-party government agency, and so they will say, like, sure enough, the contribution was in fact made on that day. It's just, you know, may take a week in transit in the mail before it gets somewhere in process.
Right.
But yeah.
You know what's a lot of fun?
Tell me.
Paying the taxes.
Yeah.
That's the most fun part.
Paying the taxes. So fun. It's interesting. I suppose it might feel different if more people felt like they were getting value from their taxes. But this has always been my point. Is there's a lot of things that are not aligned well with my values, and I am sort of forced to pay for them through the tax system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I go, I don't like that.
What always shocks me is like some of the people that just get so outraged that the government's trying to like cut back on, you know, frivolous spending. Like just the imagine I just come up to you and say, hey, there's this company and you're kind of part of it because you're paying into it. And that company is just wasting all of the money. And
like,
our plan is to like not waste as much money. And then you're like, no,
I clearly can't. It's like, because I don't like the person that made the plan.
Yeah.
Like, well, okay. So it wasn't about the plan. It's about the planners.
That's what it comes down to. Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there are people that have chosen not to hire us because they didn't like the planners.
Right.
I don't know who they are. But I think you're wrong.
I love it.
So anyway, fun stuff about tax day. I like to point these things out. Oregon, it turns out, Tax Freedom Day came a little earlier. It was yesterday, and you didn't even know it, right? Have you ever heard
yesterday?
About Tax Freedom Day?
I think I have, and I can take a stab at it, and you can tell
me
if I'm...
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I think Tax Freedom Day was like, there's a certain number of days that you have to work every single year. And if you were to add all of that up, that basically equals the amount you pay in taxes for the year. So past that point, right, it's like you get to keep every dollar that you make. Is that kind of it?
That's kind of it. Yeah, it's like there's – if you say, like, I'm going to earn this much money. Let's say 20% of your income is going to go to taxes this year.
Mm-hmm.
Then 20% of your days are – going to be paying it. So what they do is say, well, how many days is 20%? So, well, all right, so for the beginning of the year, you work this long to pay those taxes, and then every day after that is the money you keep.
Right.
Right? And so that's kind of the concept. So I think Oregon was yesterday on the 14th, and I think at a national level, it's pretty close to at the 15th right now. Do we have that?
So basically what you're saying is, for most people,
all
of that work
close.
You did between January and now went to pay your taxes,
mm-hmm.
and now you're free. You get to keep the rest.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. So you can go to, I think it's taxfreedomday.org or something like that, and you can get the different states have different days because we're not all at the same tax rates. And I didn't do a whole lot of research on it. I just know that it was pretty close to right now. And there have been, in the past, it's been earlier. right? I mean, like, it's like, oh, okay, well, in March, you worked until March 14th or something. So it kind of shows you where the taxes are. And here's the other thing.
What's the silver lining, right? Because someone now is depressed, right? Like, we told them at the very beginning, don't forget, you know, make sure you're filing for your taxes. Today's the deadline. And then
what's
someone
the
forgot.
Lining? Yeah. It's over. Like, what do you want me to say? I mean, like, yeah, Matt, it's what done. Is the silver lining?
I don't know.
Well, you know, all right, let me have a funny spin on this. I'll tell you one of the silver linings.
Okay.
Let's be thankful we don't get all the government we pay for.
That's a good one.
Right?
At least,
if you consider for a minute what that sounds like.
I've got
right?
another one for you.
Go on.
I've got silver linings. At least we're not in Canada.
Hey.
They're, everyone's like, oh, Canada's so awesome. Like, look at their tax system. Like, you pay more, a lot more, right? So
there's always this give and take. I think the tricky part is it's the value and what are you paying for? You know, philosophically, okay, there's just alert here. This isn't partisan. This is philosophy. But I also think this is kind of what you're looking for in your financial advisor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just saying, because I'm wired this way. And so I like it. But it is that I like a government to be relatively small and efficient. And the reason I like it small is because in theory, that gives you as much discretion as possible over the areas of your life that you want to control.
Mm-hmm.
So the tricky part is giving somebody the right to make a decision, even if it's a bad decision. Okay. Now, some of these are really tricky ones, right? Like, should somebody be allowed to smoke? It's a bad decision, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of go, well, yeah, I mean, it's their body, their choice kind of thing, right? And
yeah.
Everybody goes, uh-oh, here we go. No, I'm not going to go down that path. I'm just going to say, let's start with the idea that, you know, they have free will to make that choice. But the astute person then will say, well, what about the fact that the medical system spends disproportionately on people that have bad health habits?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so we all corporately end up paying for that. And what I would suggest is there's a certain cost to freedom that includes some of those things, right? And so the question is, are you willing to kind of pay that indirect tax for freedom? But the opposite is to govern heavily and you still pay a lot of tax. And so which tax is more preferable? The tax where you pay more to a government to restrict everybody's movement, or do you allow more freedom but just expect that the tax of freedom is that things will cost in certain areas?
Right.
Right? I mean, I often said there's some weird ones like helmet laws for motorcycles. Okay, you want me to just be gross on the radio?
Yeah. I love gross.
Get drunk because I'm monologuing now.
As long as I don't have to see it.
Well, here's the issue, right? Survivability rates don't go up when you take your helmet off.
Mm.
So
shocker.
Medical bills don't necessarily go up. The morgue bill might go up, but that's typically lower than the medical bill, right? And
yep.
So you're like, okay, well, what is the cost of freedom in that case? And somebody would go, wait a second, are you advocating that people die on motorcycles? 100% no. That is not what I'm advocating for, right? But I'm saying one of the costs of freedom is that's a known risk, right?
Yeah.
So that's the issue. It's like, you know, I don't know that we can bubble wrap everything. So you just understand that there's some costs that come with risk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, are we willing to pay those or not?
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, there's a bunch of examples people can bring that are like, well, what about this or what about that? And I'm like, I know it's not going to be perfect. I'm just using these as an example.
Yeah.
Anyway, taxes. We're going to pay them. We're going to move on. And you know what? If you're not pleased with it, I would encourage you to get involved in the system and try to make it better. Because just throwing rocks at it doesn't help.
Yeah, or just get better at navigating how you pay the taxes, right?
Yeah, get smarter about the system. I think that's a huge one, too.
Yeah, because there's ways that you can go get an asset where it changes how you're paying taxes on the money that you're making, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you got to know the system.
If more people could understand even the simple difference between a gain and income.
Right.
Right. This very simple difference between, I would say, earned income versus passive income, which is things like rent income and interest income.
Yeah.
Rent income has even a different connotation, but, you know, earned income versus passive income versus capital gains versus short term capital gains. And they all behave a little different. But, you know, they walk and talk with some similarities, but the differences are where the magic is, right? How you navigate the tax code. Just know this. the government puts in place incentives and penalties.
Mm-hmm.
And they do so through the tax code. So they are encouraging some behaviors and discouraging others through the tax code.
Mm.
And you've heard me say this before. I grumble because I don't like the government picking winners and losers.
Well, see, that was actually kind of part of the show that I was trying to come up with today was around this mindset of like, you know, getting rich, that's a skill, right?
Mm-hmm.
But staying rich, I feel like it's not, it pivots away from just the skill portion to like, there's some discipline involved in that, right? Like, because, and we're talking about taxes, you can get to a spot where you've ballooned your wealth, but being able to preserve it once it gets there is a whole different animal, right? Mm-hmm. Like there, you have to understand some tactics and you have to, like we just mentioned, you kind of have to have an understanding of the tax code, or maybe you hire someone that understands it, because you have to start navigating more and more complexity as your wealth grows, right? Like when there's not much wealth there, well, you go to work and, you know, you pay your income taxes and you kind of go home. But once things get to a spot where maybe you've got two or three rentals, or maybe you have a business on top of those rentals, and then you have this big bucket of money from an inheritance over here, and then you've got a big retirement account, like there's a lot more pieces of the puzzle. And so you start to have to navigate things a little bit differently if you want to stay wealthy, right? Like there, I think there's a difference between growing it and then keeping it.
Probably so, right?
Yeah.
This, I mean, this is kind of a fun show. In fact, so this is a good setup too. Like, I think we should crack this statement open. So the idea of the difference between making wealth and keeping it, how is it similar? How is it maybe different? Because I think that there are some parts to this that like they overlap, but I think your point is also, well, it's not the same thing.
Yeah, and what are the threats to the wealth, right? Like, are they actually all financial, or are there some emotional and like psychological things that jump in there
all
and
right.
that create
so
the threat?
So we got to talk a little bit about it. So listen, we'll grab a break, okay? On the flip side of this, we're going to come back. And when we do, we can talk about like the difference between building wealth and maintaining wealth, right?
Okay.
And where are the sources of wealth and where are the skills that it's going to take? But we got to, you know, take the break first. So stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio today with me.
Matt Dixon.
Okay. Remember, you can grab a podcast, get caught up if you missed the launch of the show, right? Because you're coming in
Launched pretty hot, too.
We did. We came out of the gate, so you're going to want to grab that. But, Matt, where we're at right now is this idea of, you started to allude to it, the skill set of building wealth may be different than the skill set of maintaining wealth.
Right, because there's threats, right? Like once you get to a certain point, you can start to go backwards on your wealth if you're not careful, right? Like you can make big tax mistakes that cause you to have to decrease your wealth to cover a mistake, right? There's a lot of different ways to do it, but I think what I was alluding to at the break is that it's not just financial mistakes that can cause you to have your wealth deteriorate. I think it's more than that. I think that a lot of it comes down to these like emotional and psychological issues that cause you to fumble, right? Like boredom is a really big one, right? Like if you're really bored, how do you tend to deal with that?
Yeah.
Right? Like, well, I'm bored.
Generate activity.
I'm bored. Like, I'm going to go buy that ski boat, right? And then it's like, okay. And then it's like, well, I'm bored. That wasn't enough. I'm going to go on this big, elaborate vacation. And if you're always bored and you have nothing to like...
Can I make a weird observation too?
Yeah.
I think that the less skin in the game somebody has in building their wealth, the more sloppy they tend to be with it. Here's an example.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm gonna say this. I don't have a specific example in my mind when I'm saying this, like there's no person I'm thinking of. And I also want to be really careful because I don't want to alienate and like say that this is going to be the case here. But let's say that, you know, you're in a position where you have PERS, right? And so what you know is, all right, well, regardless of what I do, my employer is going to create a pension for me that's going to generate an income for me in retirement. And so there's not a lot of requirement to develop skills other than, well, I go to work and I know that when I retire, I'm going to have this system that's going to keep paying me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I don't know that there's a lot of skill, say, navigating that other than like, well, each year I kind of file my taxes and I keep pressing on.
Right.
And you may not build a whole lot outside of that ecosystem. And that ecosystem is designed as a safety net for you, right? But it's not something that you are going to become inherently skilled at investing or navigating tax code or anything else by doing that. So I think the life skills that come with it can be fairly nominal in terms of how to build wealth, right? That being said, it's fairly effective. The problem is if you don't develop the skills and then you stop with the income and then you realize, oh, wait a second, my PERS income's less than my working income was now and I got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that is a problem because, you know, what essentially it does is, you know, gives people the false sense of security that, you know, they'll be okay. And then when they finally arrive, they're like, oh, I thought it'd be more and I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
You know, so there's an issue where the system lulls someone into a false sense of security.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's going to be fine. And then once it's time to actually, you know, retire, it's like, well, maybe it's not as fine as I thought.
Yeah. Well, or that the system will somehow magically take care of everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, well, I'll have Social Security. That'll be enough. Unlikely, right? Trying to exist on just Social Security income is really, really difficult in this day and age.
Right.
It just doesn't pay enough. It's a supplement to the other things you should be doing.
Yeah.
But it is sort of shocking to me how many people don't really build a nest egg in addition to these resources, you know, whether it be a pension or a Social Security or something else. Like, you know, you really, financial security is something that you have to actively engage in. It's not just going to surprise you in most cases. Like, there's a handful of people that might get lucky, but they are the exception, not the norm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, and even if, like, you know, you inherit it, right, that doesn't mean that you're going to keep it because a lot of people, you know, for example, they'll just go chase validation where it's like, hey, you know, look at me.
You don't inherit the skills to keep it just because you inherited it.
Yeah.
You didn't make it, so you didn't develop any skills, right?
Yeah, exactly. The skill set's a big piece.
Well, the irony is the people that get big inheritances that don't need it, it just grows their wealth, right? It's the people that really need the inheritance, oftentimes that the inheritance doesn't necessarily solve the problem because if you don't develop the skills, they're not going to just manifest because you got money now.
Yeah. Well, and the other piece could be too, like, what if your value set is like not really defined? Then I feel
go
like...
Go on. What do you mean?
Well, like, say you don't really like know what your purpose is or like what it is that you're trying to do. Like, I think a lot of people are just like, well, just if I had more, then everything's okay. Right. But if you don't have like a really kind of clear value set, I feel like your money kind of starts to pull you in every direction. Right. Like, well, one minute it's this. And then the next minute, this is the next trendy thing. And so if you're always chasing in a different direction and your money's going to follow you in that direction and slowly it's just going to start to go away. But like if you know who you are, what you're about, the things that you like, and I feel like at that point, you know, you're less likely to go down a bunch of wrong turns and where those wrong turns are costly.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely that danger.
Yeah. Right?
And that's kind of the problem. It's again, this is lottery mentality, but the people are like, oh, if I could win $1 million or $1 billion, everything would be fixed. It's like, probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if you don't have the skills to manage it, then, but you, it turns out it doesn't take skill to spend money. Right.
Yeah.
That is not a skill, right? Saving money is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And separating wants and needs is a skill. And learning to understand, you know, how to navigate tax code and you know, even basic bookkeeping, those are all skills.
Yeah.
But, you know, somebody just drops a pot of money in your lap. All right, well, I'll spend it until it's gone.
Yeah.
That's surprisingly how people operate when they have windfalls is that, you know, I'm always kind of a victim. I couldn't figure out how to make money, and now I got some. And when they spend it all, they're like, see, I was a victim.
Yeah.
You know, wait a second. And then everybody else is like, no, you're nuts, man. You had all this money. But so many people get in that same boat. And I just think there is a financial literacy issue.
And I think like part of it, if you really want to be successful, is know what it is that you're shooting for, right? And for that, it's different for everyone. But for one person, it might be, well, you know, I want to be able to live in this house until I die. And I have a garden that costs me this much every year. And I have maybe a mother-in-law who I'm supporting. And, you know, you can go down the list of, like, here are all the costs that are in my life. And as long as I take care of these things, I'm happy. That, like, that's quantitative, right? Like, that's a number. And so if you can actually have a number behind what it is that you're doing, I feel like the money goes a lot farther because you know what you want and what you need to do.
There's this secret that you kind of hidden in that statement that's even more simple than that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the idea of writing your goals down.
Yeah.
Right? If you will sort of quantify what you're trying to do, it gives you something to benchmark with, right? More is not a benchmark.
Yep.
Right? And enough, it's not a benchmark, right? Because they're subjective terms. And that's probably something that it's sort of like when somebody says, well, they should pay their fair share. And I go, okay, define fair. Right?
I know.
And then everybody gets a little squeamish about it. And it's like, well, let me just change the subject. Right? Well, they have all this money. It's like, no, you're avoiding the answer. Right? What is fair? Right? Well, it should be $1 billion. Like, okay, how'd you get there? I don't know. They don't. Who needs $1 billion? Ah, so we're back into the subjective again, right? What is fair, right? Okay, it's subjective versus objective. Fair is 12%. Yeah. Okay, well, I can calculate that, right? So anyway, just a slightly off course, but I kind of every now and then I feel like I need to pull the hammer out. Here's the fun news. Most of our listeners, probably all of our listeners, because we only have the brilliant listeners, right? But they're the ones going like, yeah, no kidding. Why won't people be more financially responsible? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. And there's somebody out there going, you should try to go live life. It's hard. Wow.
Oh, that was a violent alarm.
But, you know, I'm not going to say life is easy. But what I am going to say is that there's a combination of reasonable decisions and reasonable effort and time.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
And if you will just do all of those things, it tends to play itself out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say that there won't be scenarios that are genuinely bad, but they're far less frequent than people would have you believe. You know, it's far less frequent that somebody is permanently disabled and unable to work, and therefore the system, you know, really does, you know, we try to find a way to help. But a lot of folks are just, well, look, I made a series of bad decisions, and then I kind of didn't take accountability for it. And then I compounded it with yet more bad decisions. And sure enough, it got worse. And then I hung out with other people making bad decisions, and I tried to blame them for more bad decisions I made. And say, look, bad decisions give bad outcomes.
Yeah.
Period. Right? I mean, that's just how that works. So don't expect good outcomes comes from bad decisions.
Yeah.
And then people go, well, you just don't understand. I go, I understand it's hard. I understand it's expensive. But I understand it's impossible if you're going to just use those as excuses and then go have bad behaviors and then wonder why that happened.
Yeah, you kind of have to stay grounded, right? And if you're always kind of chasing, yeah, it doesn't pan out.
Well, and at some point you got to say, like, I need to stop comparing myself to everybody else and run my own race.
That is a big one.
Right? And that is kind of a theme that's buried in this thing.
It
also
is.
Like today's show, the whole idea was, like, you know, how do you build wealth? But then how do you not lose yourself in the process? And that first step is, you know, it starts by, you know, stop comparing yourself to everybody else.
Mm. You know, I actually have a good quote for you based on what you just said.
Okay.
Yeah. So align your capital with your calling, not the crowd.
Yeah. That is such a big deal right now. Although I will say there's some fascinating research around this. I'll name drop. I'm not usually very good at this, but
okay.
He's an interesting character because we have like 80% value alignment and then like 20% where we're inverse. And I'm just like, oh, dude, that 20% is kind of like significant stuff. But anyway, guy's name is Scott Galloway. He's an author, has done a lot of cool stuff, a lot of great research. So he's kind of a thought leader.
Okay.
And he talks about, should you do things that you're passionate about? And his point is actually probably not, right? What happens is people that have already achieved wealth say, follow your passion and this will work out. But that's actually statistically really unlikely. what Galloway suggests is follow your talent. And what tends to happen is things that you're talented at, you become passionate at anyway.
Mm.
And so you will develop passion where you have talent, but that talent will be something that is more likely to get you compensated, right? And so I think there's some real wisdom in that, that we should be finding ways to upgrade our skills and become more valuable. And you don't want to hate what you do. It's hard to overcome that. But if you're looking for your passion may not be terribly, it may not be terribly valuable in the marketplace, in which case, you know, you might be a really excellent swim instructor, okay? But the market doesn't pay that much for swim instructors in most cases, right? Unless you can find Olympians to train and you happen to be that level, you're going to have to compete with a bunch of other people that could be swim instructors that may be only 90% as good as you, but 10% the cost.
Right.
So that's the problem, is that, like, it's just not enough. So you may need to look at your other skill sets. So anyway, well, so there's step one. And I can't believe it. I'm already looking at the clock here. We have to take another obscene profit.
Are we already on our second one?
Yeah, we really are. So we better do that. We'll grab our break. When we come back, Matt asks more goofy questions.
Let's
we are going to talk
it.
A little bit about wealth building, right?
Okay.
The process of the building and how those skills get developed for the keeping. Right?
I like it.
Because it turns out you're not independent. But we'll unpack that in a little bit. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Yeah, True Wealth. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Okay, Matt.
Yep.
So we're talking about, I want to make this case for our listeners. I think one of your interesting points is this idea that building wealth and maintaining wealth are not necessarily, they're not the same skill set.
Nope.
But I believe that in order to get the skill set to maintain wealth, you probably need to build wealth first.
Yeah.
Like it's a journey that develops those skills, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I want to talk about two different paths here, and I wonder if you can help our listeners.
Sure.
One of the paths is what I will call sort of the traditional financial firm sales pitch, which is invest early and often over a long period of time and compound interest will make you wealthy. Okay. And then the other is the entrepreneur's pathway, which is develop something that will ultimately generate income for you that will become more and more passive the more you develop it, until you kind of have your money doing the work for you.
And I think there's a third one, right?
Go on.
The
yeah.
third one is you witnessed it early on,
mm-hmm.
and it was like subtly like this kind of trained behavior in the back of your mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you had that person leading as an example and they just walked it, and then you kind of just naturally land in a spot where you're like, I've seen it a million times.
Yeah,
and I'm already really well set up. I'm well set up. Like I've got maybe like, I don't know, maybe it's a family business or something, right?
Okay.
Where it's like the groundwork has been laid. Like that person labored to take it from nothing to this big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's this big thing. And I get to just walk in with the skill set and the asset in my hand and grow it even more,
mm-hmm.
right? I think that's kind of the third piece too.
Sure, sure. Well, and let's be clear. There are ways to train to do this, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's not just go to school, but I mean, there's other paths to training and mentorship and internship and apprenticeship. And those are ways that one develops the skills so that they can walk into an organization that, and it's not at the beginning, right? And to me, that's kind of, it is a hybrid between, you know, it's because it's still kind of a path too, but like you can be on both paths simultaneously.
True.
Right. So when we talk about the skills of hanging on to wealth,
mm-hmm.
like let's talk about the traditional compound interest pathway. What are some of the skills that you would need in order to maintain wealth if that was it? Like, first of all, what's building wealth look like on that path? And then how do you maintain
it? Well, like you said, you start early and often. But even if you start early and often, right, like say you put it into a bad investment and you just keep funding that poorly performing asset, you might actually not end up in that great of a spot. So part of that is knowledge of like, what is it that I'm actually buying? And is there a better opportunity somewhere else? Like, okay. And it doesn't even have to be like, you know everything, but as long as you have a baseline foundation of what your investment choices are, and because like, let me give you an example. You've got this 20-year-old that's like, okay, I'm starting really early and I'm going to make all these contributions, but they are buying a money market fund that's historically doing 1 to 2%,
okay, I see
right?
What you're saying.
Like they just invested in an asset and they did all the right things. They started early and often. They did a healthy contribution rate, but they bought something that wasn't really appreciating more than inflation, so they lost on a long-term scale.
You can tell this is coming from someone that you've known who did this. Yeah, I'm not. It just is like, and it pains me a little bit because I'm like, it's not a typical example. But the fact that it happens is why
well,
we need
I
to
think
talk
it's
about
actually
it.
Way more common than
that's
we
what
think.
I, well, that's I guess what I mean by typical is. So here's what first went through my mind.
Okay.
When you first described this, I thought so negligence, right? But it's not really negligence.
Ignorance.
What it is naivety and ignorance.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
and
ignorance.
It's like, I thought I was doing it, but I wasn't. And what you're really saying is, you need to invest in something viable.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well,
that's
this was
really
me actually first out of college, right? Like. Mm-hmm. I had heard all these horror stories about 2008, and oh, I lost my shirt in the stock market, this, that, and the other. And so I had this preconceived notion of, well, take a moderate amount of risk from the time that you first start, and then everything will just be hunky-dory because you won't get slammed. Well, I was like 20 years old, and I'm doing 10, 12%, but I was buying a bunch of garbage mutual funds that never actually went up in value, hardly. Right? Like they were bad. But I didn't know what I was buying. I had no idea.
Right. Now, it's funny how, not funny, haha, funny, like sad, funny, how many people I think find themselves in that spot because the financial system is pretty good at selling stuff,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily good at wanting to be accountable to the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which is one of the reasons that we talk about fiduciary asset management, right? That's something, now, subtle program or subtle plug for Little John Financial because we are fiduciaries, right? So
yeah.
there's a certain amount of the idea that we're supposed to be investing in what we believe to be the thing that is in the best interest of our customers, okay?
Yeah.
And so that's where you sort of transfer that knowledge and experience and you know use that for your customers. But in your case, Matt, you know, like 401k or something like that, there may have been very limited, if any, guidance at all. And so, in a sense, yeah. It was just, you know, educated guesses, but you didn't have enough education.
Well, and that was part of why I went into education, too, right? Like, you always heard, like, oh, man, when you retire, you've got this huge pension and everything's fine. And so, as you know, when you're a kid, you hear that type of stuff and you're like, well, I'll be fine. Like, if I go into this, it's good. But you get into it, right? And you actually start looking at what is PERS setting you up for. And in this instance, right, like I wasn't one of those tier one employees.
Right.
They changed the program.
Right.
And so a lot of the times people think, oh, well, there is a pension here and that's going to just magically take care of me. But I started actually looking at the numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wait a minute, like this is kind of where I probably land. And then I looked at that and said, am I okay with that? And the answer was no. And so it's like, probably
right.
Time to make a change.
Well, desired outcome was different.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly.
If you guys knew the backstory of, like, I've known Matthew for a long time, since he was, like, you know, grade school age.
Yep.
And, you know, watching the pathway. He came to me when he was working as a teacher and said, talk to me about finance a little bit.
Yeah.
And so that's where the conversation started. And now we work together, which is really awesome. But anyhow, yeah, I think your point of that is a pathway that
ignorance is not bliss.
Yeah. Yeah. Now there's, I will say the willingness to play the long game is really valuable, right?
Mm-hmm.
Folks that find themselves going through today's market turmoil and just kind of shrugging their shoulders and going, well, this is going
to
happen sometimes. And
you
they don't stress
do
about
that.
It.
You have to do that.
Like that will work out fine.
Yeah.
It really will. I think the only people that should be particularly nervous about this downturn right now would be if you have to take significant amounts of your investment out right now. Like if you needed it,
mm-hmm.
the market was down, that's pain, right? But otherwise, the value on your statement right now, I'm just going to kind of say this, and this is a little bit of a risky statement on the radio, but I think I can get away with it. I think the value on your statement isn't real important today. I mean, does it matter? Sure. Is it an accounting snapshot? Sure. But if you're an investor and you have adequate time, then this is noise in the long term. It gets worked out because capital is very, very clever about figuring out how to be profitable.
Yeah.
Right? It is in its best interest and its survival interest to do so. So I've always said this, or almost always, right? That capital wants to survive. And so until our system ceases to be a capitalist system, it finds a way through this stuff. And this is just noise right now. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you need access to the money, that's when planning shows up.
Right.
Okay. And so that there should have been buckets of money that were more liquid and less sensitive to market drawdown so that you had adequate access. It's legit emergency stuff that shouldn't really be emergencies because there's no such thing as financially planned emergencies. Right. That's not how planning works.
Yeah.
So, you know, now fail to plan and there could be financial emergencies. But when you're planning, there really shouldn't be, because you should have these sort of tranches of money that you can go and access and buy yourself adequate time. Right?
I like that.
That's what insurance is for. There's these just layers of risk management that should be in place.
Well, it makes sense, right? Like if you are 70 years old and all you did was put money in a traditional IRA,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you need $100,000 because of X, Y, or Z, and you didn't like kind of plan for that expense, and now you've got to pull it all out of that IRA. Like, ouch.
Yeah. Well, those are some of the things that are the risks. So let's use this as a transition for the last segment. All right. So first, the risk of the tried and true long game, invest and have compound interest, is that you can still overlook financial planning elements that could ultimately bite you.
And it happens way more often than you would think.
Way more often. People don't understand the tax implications of distributions. They don't understand mandatory distributions. They don't understand that they may have liquidity needs, how Medicare gets priced. There's lots of
little understand
things.
How it affects their inheritors, right? Like the people that are going to inherit those funds potentially.
Yeah, which, you know, you could shrug your shoulders and say, that's not my problem. But yeah, there are just things that from a financial efficiency statement, perspective rather, it's just not efficient, right? There are just better ways to do it. And so, but then we have the other side of the equation is, you know, like building a different path. Right. So let's talk a little bit about it, but let's grab our last break. Right. I'm looking at it. So we're running long. Let's grab the last break. We will come back and we're going to talk a little bit about the wealth building concept in addition to the long term wealth building programs. And then that skill set for hanging onto it from there. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
I like that as the theme idea. It's like, so welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where Matt and I are just talking. And so what if we were summarizing the theme of the show, I sort of said, it feels like it's a you by design show,
mm-hmm.
right? But at least financially, right? This idea of, hey, you know, there's building wealth, there's different pathways. And then there's keeping wealth, which is skills that you learn. But ultimately, I think you made this point right out of the gate, Matt, which was like, what is it that you're trying to build? Like who what are your values and what are you looking for? And you said, like, this isn't a comparison game,
mm-hmm.
right? It's about putting your money where your value system is. And that means like kind of knowing what your value system is.
Yeah.
Right?
How many people can actually answer that question? Right.
Yeah, and I realize that it's a little bit of an ambiguous one, but like, let's just say building your life with intention.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, these are the things that I value. This is how I like to spend my time. This is the amount of resource that I would really like to have for things to work. Like, you might be surprised to find like a garage full of supercars probably isn't going to scratch the itch that you think it scratches.
Yeah.
Right. For young men, they probably
honestly
think it's a way
like,
to attract.
That just sounds horrible to me.
Yeah.
Right. Because like, look at all the maintenance involved. all like if it gets a scratch, you freak out. Like I had a really nice car one time. I bought a brand new Mustang. I wouldn't even drive it on gravel. And I ended up hating the car because like little things weren't perfect and I got rid of it. And I just told myself, like, no, don't go. A vehicle is a utility piece. It doesn't need to sit in a garage. Like, when you're done with it, send it on its way and go get another one.
You know what I appreciate about Matthew is that he kind of treats our investors a little bit like that Mustang.
Yeah.
It's like, it's supposed to be perfect.
It's true.
And I'm like, look, you can be neurotic on that. Okay.
Yeah.
Other stuff you're not allowed, but on that, yes, make
That's
it perfect
the one
for the
thing,
client.
Yeah. There's certain things that have to be perfect, right? Like,
so that one works to you guys' advantage. So if you're like thinking to yourself about, you know, who should your advisor
I'm
be,
that
like,
way with
Matt
my,
will be neurotically focused on making it right for
I'm
you.
I'm that way with my guns too. Like
yeah.
they
it's true though, everything's always clean and pristine.
Yeah, like it can't have a scratch.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Go into orbit.
It's incapable of firing if there's a scratch
like
on
the
it.
The trap gun has to be oiled. Barrel has to be cleaned, greased, put away the same way every time.
Yes.
No.
There's also some ritualistic prayer that he has. It's really remarkable.
I won a trap shoot this last weekend.
Nice.
Yeah. It was actually really fun. It was the big money shoot. Got first place.
Well done.
Took the cash out of that thing.
So, by the way, Matt is subtly hinting at part of his value system right now.
Yes.
So you know some of the things that you like to do for recreation,
mm-hmm.
and you just talked about how the fancy car isn't the thing that really scratches the itch.
Yeah, I'd rather have the $20,000 trap gun than the $20,000 car.
Okay. Well, yeah. You heard it here on the radio.
But I
gang.
Beat the guy that had the $20,000 trap gun with the $1,200 trap gun. That really, you could see like blood start to boil, hair start to fall out.
It turns out there's still skill involved. You can own a really nice gun and just
it's true.
Miss.
You got it, like yeah.
So
yeah, it's true.
So,
but
props to you for the skills.
Nah, sometimes it's just better to be lucky than good.
I'm not gonna lie.
It was a really windy day. There was a couple of birds where it was like the wind would catch them. I just throw a Hail Mary up and like, oh, got that one. And I only won by one bird. So, like, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good.
Well, you know what? Humility is attractive. Good job.
Yeah.
All right. So, all of this back to our. So, for you guys as listeners, yeah, you're getting a piece of Matthew insight. I love that. But how do we make this relevant for everybody that's listening to the show? Like, Matt, how do you, if you were going to give just a couple of key takeaways from today's show on like, building the you you want to be, what is it?
Yeah. I would say, try not to let money change who you are, right? Like sometimes that happens to people, but kind of know who you are, what you're about. We've talked about that a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I think part of that is, you gotta have a little bit of solitude in your life. Don't burn yourself out, right?
Solitude, help me out.
Yeah, if you get up and every day is a frantic, chaotic just mess, right? Like have some daily solitude.
I think solitude is like alone time.
Yeah, it is a little
like
bit of that.
Almost like, but some buffer time where you
like have some of that, have some rest. Some mm-hmm. people they don't rest, right? And
yeah, even God took a day off. Seriously.
Exactly. Yeah, and you need to also, and part of that is like if you have some time, like a quiet moment, you're gonna be able to reflect back on what is it that we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what am I really about? And then your money will start to, I think, align with that. Because if you're just running like a chicken with your head cut off, you're going to lose your focus. And it's just going to be, that's how I think people get into the game of more. They just run too hard.
Well, the other thing that I have noticed is when people run hard, it's hard to assess the situation thoroughly at times. Sometimes that is what makes somebody more frantic about market movement.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no secret. Last week, markets were way down.
Right? Yeah.
And they bounced back pretty well, surprisingly, in fact. And because, there was, we're going to have tariffs. And then, well, never mind. Maybe we're going to just hit the pause button.
Yeah.
And so real market gyrations and a number of folks, that was pretty agitating.
Mm-hmm.
And I would suggest that is an opportunity that making the right decision is more important than making the fast decision.
Yeah, because at some point you're going to wake up and it's going to be 40 years down the road and you're going to have mm-hmm. to look back on like, how did I do it, right? Because if you made your wealth in a way that you're not proud of, I don't think it's going to hit the same way too either.
And I think here's another one. that if a day's move in the market is going to destroy your investment strategy, you've probably got the wrong investment strategy.
Yeah. Are you way over-concentrated in something?
It doesn't sound like an investment anymore.
Speculation.
It sounds like you're speculating, and that's where you get into trouble.
That's a big one. If people can just walk away from the show remembering one thing, that's a big one, right? Like,
It's really important to understand. With speculation, you get drawn into that because that's the game of compare. Somebody else was successful, and I want to duplicate this. And so you start wanting it
you
fast
start chasing
and now.
Stuff.
And the people that I've seen that are most successful, I just don't know a whole lot of really successful day traders that do other stuff too, right? If you're a day trader, that's what you do. That's the job, right? It's pretty hard to successfully day trade and then have the bandwidth to do other stuff because there's just so much information to track. And so you have to decide what you're about.
Yeah.
And I think that was the original crux of this is,
yep.
What is the life that you want to design? What are the things that you value? And building that with intention. And I think when it comes down to it, and you know, what's in it for us? Because we're doing a radio show and you know, we're just a big paid commercial, right? That's what we help our customers do, right? The financial planning is about aligning values with resources and then the strategies to make those work together to give you the best chance of building the life that you hope to have one day.
Yeah.
Right. And with that, Matt, how can they find us?
Yeah. Why don't you go to the website, littlejohnfs.com, or you can call us or text us at 541-375-0898.
All right. So there you go. You can text us, you can email us, but whatever it is, give us a shout. It doesn't cost anything to get a second opinion, so we're always happy to do that. But as I look at the clock and it's ticking down, I realize it's been fun, but it's time for us to go. Until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.